Hi, this is Jim from Safety Wars. Before we start the program, I want to make sure everyone understands that we often talk about OSHA and EPA citations, along with some other regulatory actions from other agencies, legal cases, and criminal activity. Everyone is innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. Proposed fines are exactly that, and they are often litigated, reduced, or vacated. We use available public records, news accounts, and press releases. We cannot warranty or guarantee the details of any of the stories we share, since we are not directly involved with these stories, at least not most of the time. Enjoy the show.
This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
Come and listen to a story about a man named Jim. Safety's his game and the odds were looking grim. Workplace hazards everywhere, from ladders to machines. He took on the mission to make those places clean.
Safety, that is. PPE. OSHA rules.
Well, next thing you know, old Jim's in high demand. Teaching folks safety from the mines to the land. Said we gotta keep them safe. Make sure they know the score. About hazards and the dangers that they just can't ignore.
Training, that is. Inspections, safety plans.
So now they call him up. Safety Wars is here to stay. Fighting the good fight, keeping dangers at bay. Tune in and learn with Jim. He's got the safety know-how. Cause Safety Wars is on and we're starting right now.
Yes, we are starting right now. From the border of liberty and prosperity in the highway to the north. This is Safety Wars for Monday, January 27th. I like the new controls. Gotta love it. Anyway. A lot going on today. We're going to start off today. Somber note. Holocaust Commemoration Day. Today, 80 years. Today is the 80th anniversary of the liberation of Auschwitz. I've never been there. Never had the opportunity. My parents were there a couple of times over the years. As everyone knows, my mother is from Poland. And now, it impacted them greatly, and impacted my mother greatly because of her experiences during World War II in the Soviet concentration camps that we're not really supposed to talk about in this country because we're allies with the Soviets. But it was a whole new level on the Soviet end, and it's still the same today with the with the war in Ukraine, where they're expatriating Ukrainians. No, this is what it is. They don't have enough people. Russia has a problem. They created a situation with demographic, basically what I call a demographic bomb in the 1920s, and they ended up needing people from all over, and during World War II, that's what they did. They expatriated people into the former Soviet Union, and millions of people were killed. On the Nazi German end, was a different situation. The situation was that they were exterminating whole groups of people after, most of the rest of the world didn't believe anything was going to happen. Germany tried to deport huge amounts of people, and including the United States. We turned back the ships, a lot of these folks ended up in concentration camps and exterminated. It's a gut-wrenching thing. I took two courses on this in college at Stockton State College, taught by Rabbi Murray Cohn, was a survivor of Auschwitz, and the other one was
taught by another professor. Harrowing what one man could do to another. And let's remember, they were fairly technologically and culturally advanced, the German people. And they were taken over by a madman and another group out for power. And, it still was, we're still in the effects, feeling of the effects of that today. One example is the, and I'm not even going to share his name, but some of the listeners here from New Jersey will remember a couple years back, there was a book written, The Nazi Pastor. And the Nazi pastor was the pastor of Zion Lutheran Church in Rahway, New Jersey, that I used to be a member of. And the impact of his support for the Nazi party and giving aid and comfort to the Nazi cause in this country. So if we recall in our history books, there was some Nazi spies landed in Long Island, and they were along the lines of, I don't know if they were harbored or if they were taken care of or what have you, but this pastor had aided them in this country. And very interesting story, but even today, that congregation has been impacted by that. That was 80 years ago with that. The person eventually was caught and was put into jail. I heard from the old timers when I was there that even in the 1970s, a lot of the followers of that Nazi pastor were against bringing in African Americans into the church. And eventually what ended up was the demographics took over where people died, and that was it. Moved on. Went to retirement homes down in Whiting and down in Florida. Yeah, in New Jersey, that's where a lot of people go, is Whiting, New Jersey, to all the retirement communities. But the Toms River area. The other thing is, what happens is, people romanticize this era. History gets rewritten. I was reading an article last week that up to 50% of people under 40 do not believe that the Holocaust actually occurred. Put that into your head. Let it compute into your head. This didn't occur. And by the way, this is the one thing that I can relate to directly with this, because growing up, I hear, and I still hear it today, I heard it from somebody on the internet about 3 weeks ago, that what happened in the Soviet Union and Communist China today and what happened back in 1948 with the revolution in Communist China, that never happened. Right? So I get it. So how do we counteract that? We counteract it by what we're doing here today. We're communicating. We're talking about it. We're educating about it. Now, as the Holocaust victims are succumbing to old age, the remaining ones, what I want you to do is this. If you have a child, if you have a young person in your family, I want you to go out, and if you can, if you run into one of these folks, like in my community, right, I live in a predominantly Jewish community here up in Rockland County. If you can find one of these folks, kindly ask to see their tattoo. And remember, that was IBM that sold them that technology. Put in the tattoo machines. So don't think that there weren't people in this country that did support the Nazi regime and continued to support the Nazi regime. They romanticize it. Sort of like during the Civil War in this country. as the Civil War veterans were dying out, what movie came out? Come on, a little bit of jeopardy here. Birth of a Nation, which was used as propaganda even up until today, is my understanding. Which was about racist propaganda, and you could go and you could Google that. Right, and we're looking, I believe it was 1912, 1913 silent movie. And that's when a lot of these Confederate statues went up. So now it stands to reason, now we're getting into this 80 years after the Holocaust, where we're getting to this thing where people are romanticizing about World War II. Especially when we have a statistic where half of the people in the world don't believe that this happened. So let's not fall into the trap. Pardon me. It's, so how do we combat this? We talk about it. We educate. Don't forget. Never forget, as the movie title says. We're going to go to brief commercial break, and we're going to come back.
In the professional safety community, communication and planning are just a few keys to your program's success. The question many practitioners have is, where do I start? Dr. Jay Allen, the creator of the Safety FM platform and host of the Rated R Safety Show, has built a global foundation to help you along the way. Go to safetyfm.com and listen to some of the industry's best and most involved professionals, including Blaine Hoffman with the Safety Pro, Sam Goodman with the Hop Nerd, Sheldon Primus with the Safety Consultant, Jim Pozell with Safety Wars, Emily Elrod with Unapologetically Bold, and many others. As individuals, we can do great things, but as a team, we become amazing. Dial into safetyfm.com today and surround yourself with a powerful force of knowledge and support.
OSHA recordables, catastrophic losses, environmental disasters. You want answers? So do I. This is Jim Pozell with Safety Wars.
That's my daddy.
Okay, I'm going to do a share screen here with this. I am, by the way, this is all pre-recorded, not very far from actual broadcast time, but this is a pre-recorded program. Here we have National Preparedness Level. This is from, and unfortunately, when these tragedies happen, like in California, we find out all these obscure government websites. I found a couple of really obscure ones today on another subject. Here we have the National Interagency Fire Center. It's NIFC.gov, so this is a government website, which means that we are sharing it. Four large fires in Southern California, and this is this morning's update, have burned 54,519 acres. About 4,300 wildland firefighters and support personnel are assigned to these incidents. Please find the Hughes, or as my mother would say, Hudges, and Eaton Fire, IMCI Web, and the Palisades Fire and Border 2 Fire on the Cal Fire website. Current information is available about these fires, including resources for those seeking or offering support after the devastating losses that have occurred here. While containment is progressing on these fires, Santa Ana winds continue to contribute to a high-risk significant fire potential. Many firefighting resources are committed to initial attack on new starts. A new fuels and fire behavior advisory has been issued by California South Ops Coordination Center covering the south coast and adjacent land. 8 MAFFS C-130 air tankers and support personnel have been deployed to support wildland fire operations in Southern California. Canadian resources supporting these efforts include two air tankers from Quebec. Thank you, Canada. Two crews and two overhead personnel from Alberta, and one crew and overhead personnel from British Columbia. Do you live in the Wildland Urban Interface, or WUI? Be fire-wise by building homes with fire-resistant materials, especially on the roof, and remove flammable materials from around your home. And it goes on. And be fire-adaptive and fire-wise. We're going to look into that. Now, we had mentioned on our last program, and it's been a couple of days, I know, about air quality and everything, where you got to make sure you wear a mask and do this, you know, and everything else. They're at it again, like from a young Frankenstein, right? Here we have Los Angeles North Main Street Air Pollution Real-Time Air Quality Index. This was updated this afternoon at 1400 hours in LA time. Now, that is 417 hours. So this is like 24 minutes ago. So this is really, right? So we have the, here on the left-hand side, PM 2.5, PM 10, ozone, right? O3, nitrogen oxide, NO2, SO2, sulfur dioxide, nitrogen dioxide, or nitrogen oxides, sulfur dioxide, and carbon monoxide. Now, these are the National Ambient Air Quality Standards here. And the other one is lead. Now, that can't be measured in real time. So they send that out for analysis. But right now, they had PM 2.5 was at 50 at, looks like 12 a.m., midnight going into, no, 12 noon yesterday. 12 noon yesterday, but it's been in the green. So, we're going to talk a little later in the week, and we are going to try to do five programs this week. On if we could do it, we could do it. It's like the novenas in the Catholic Church, right? You got to go all the time for the novenas, right? Well, this is like sort of like that. We're going to try to make it all every day. But, if you're doing something specific, cleanups and everything, then these numbers really don't count. These are only for like general ambient air, meaning in the environment, not specifically what you're dealing with that. And I'm going to say this, and this is, it's going to be controversial what I say, guaranteed. I'm going to say this, we'll switch. Oh, look, we got another camera here. I'll switch to this one. And I can never get these camera settings right. Here. So they're two different cameras that are supposed to be at the same resolution. But the... what you are doing personally and right with that has is a different exposure. That's a workplace exposure. Not an ambient exposure. So this is along the lines of, like, when someone wants to do air monitoring for your air sampling, and they say, you're working there, or we're going to put the air monitoring devices all the way over there, sort of thing. Right? It doesn't apply. You know it doesn't apply. You know that they're giving you a bunch of woo-no, so why do you do it? Why do you stand for it? So later in the week, we're going to talk about disaster response. Now, Trump on Friday did a tour of North Carolina and in the area from Hurricane Helene, and the other one was in California. He eviscerated, to say the least, California and their management, and specifically the mayor and the governor. I mean, he told them right to her face, this Los Angeles mayor here. What's her name? L.A. Mayor Oh. Karen Bass. Just completely and totally eviscerated her. I mean, they had a town hall meeting, and they're like, well, basically the whole gist was 18 months out is what they're talking out with this. And I tried to call into a couple of nationwide radio shows on this. They are not concerned with cleaning up. Any time that they are concerned with these disasters is not about the cleanup. That is not the primary concern. We're talking the recovery. Yeah, and they're in the heat of the disaster and everything else. Rescue. Yeah, absolutely. What we're talking about is when they actually go and long-term recovery, they're not concerned with the person. They're not concerned with the family. They're not concerned with the property. What are they concerned with? They're concerned with setting up a system. Setting up a system to respond. Now you're going to say, well, Jimmy, you're full of groove now. You don't know what you're talking about. Okay. Gulf oil spill. Right? You have a very easily defined group of people that were impacted by that. Fishermen. Right? People in anything to do with the fishing industry. Rather than getting out, and no, this is why you shouldn't cheat on your taxes, by the way. Rather than going out and getting everyone's tax return, that file them for the last 3 years, determining how much money they're making, determining about how much money they're going to lose, and then maybe doubling it, right, because you have damages to equipment and everything else that you have to manage. Right, and then writing them out a check, real simple, right? Because you have to put down what you do for a living on that. And then maybe setting up an office for a couple of months. Hey, bring us, if there's discrepancies and what the settlement, figuring that out. It's not what they did. They said, we're going to set up a system to distribute this money. And what goes with that system? Bureaucrats, political patronage jobs, honey contracts, basically. Contracts that are really lucrative and everything else goes in there. So they're not worried about helping people all the time. They're worried about a system to help people. Because a system has very little accountability, doesn't it? Very little. And that's bearing us out now with California. Case in point, I mentioned this about 3 weeks ago, and this is not a government website. This is a .org, not a .gov. So I can't really share. I'm really not supposed to. Okay, this is what we have. We have the mayor, right, Bass. Right. And she appoints five different people to the fire commissioner. Now, we're going to do this again. The Los Angeles Fire Department is overseen by a five-person civilian board appointed by the mayor and affirmed by the city council. Pursuant to the city charter, this diverse and qualified group establishes goals and provides direction to the department through Fire Chief Kristen Crowley. Right? And oversight. Okay. Now, I would think that this is what happens. It's the issue attention cycle. So way back in the day, and this is what happens with all safety, by the way, not only this, but basically all safety. It's not continuous improvement. It's that we handled the problem we don't have to worry about, and it goes away. So what were they doing? Back in the 1960s, 70s, 80s, and 90s, building up all these communities, they put together a system, right? Got to put together a system of fighting fires, which included firefighters, fire department garages and stations, other equipment, setting up hydrants, and everything else. And then, oh, well, we got it. Now we can forget about it. We're not going to hire, right now, according to the fire chief Crowley, who I actually believe here, probably the most honest person here, because she hasn't done the duck and cover. She's done the blame game, but not the duck and cover a game like everybody else. She pointed out that they needed 60-some more firehouses. They needed, they're shorthanded. They're relying on overtime rather than the number of firefighters, and they can't respond to all the emergencies, all right? And they're undermanned, understaffed, under-equipped, all right? My question is this, right? So she solved the problem. This was all that, everyone forgets about this. You need continuous improvement. She pointed out things that they needed over the, completely got shot down. And who shot them down? My understanding is this. The people in charge of the budget, those procurement people, those budgeting people. So, this is what we have here. And I'm not going to call these people out by name this time, but you could go to LAFD.org and you can go and look them up yourself. All right? Here we have the president of we haven't heard from these people, by the way, since this begun. We heard about this one person, the president of the fire service, for like a minute, and another one for like a one or two sentence blurb, but then we haven't heard, where are these people? I want to know. I raised this question online. Nobody knows where they are, right? We have someone here. She's the president, a undergraduate degree from Texas College in English. She has a master's in education from Pepperdine, 1972. An MBA, with nonprofit management, right? On this honorary doctorate in political science, specializing in public policy. Certified mediator, meeting all the requirements set forth by, and, she was a school teacher, and everything else that went in here. Very good. I'm sure with all of this stuff, she's very well qualified to do all of this stuff. I'm not seeing public safety or I'm not seeing public firefighter experience in here or anything to do with public safety. All right, and she had with that. So I don't know. Did she pick something up? I don't know. But on paper, it's not looking very good here. We have the second one, the vice president here. They are the civil, right, and here it says, she's the vice president of the civilian board charged with overseeing and making policy for the city of Los Angeles Fire Department. She comes with 30 years of experience in administrative and policy roles with elected representatives and advocacy groups. She must, right, in this position, she currently serves as in another job, right, of a board member, with a board member on the LAUSD school board. And that position, she drives driving full access to excellent education for every student in every neighborhood. She is a community engagement coordinator. Going on and on and on, I'm not seeing, she's a great community leader. I'm sure with all this other stuff she did a phenomenal job. I'm not seeing firefighter. I'm not seeing a public safety professional. I'm not even seeing a government administration person here with this. Okay, let's go to the next one. Next commissioner. She served on the Fire and Police Pension Board Commissioner since 2014. Okay, this I can see a little bit. You need to have somebody like this on as a commissioner, because this is what you're, part of what you're doing is you're doing stuff with this, with, you're doing stuff with pensions. You got to manage them. Very good. I can see that. But again, no firefighter experience, no public safety experience, nothing, nada. But she is a real estate professional. Okay. Pay attention to this. Right when this this gets redeveloped. Here we have another guy. All right, He is a medical doctor, and he's from a very has a very prestigious position as a medical doctor and involved with hospitals and public health on that side. He was involved with the Healthcare Workforce Policy Commission. Okay, maybe you need somebody like that with some knowledge on that, with some healthcare with this. He does volunteer work. Great, great, great. Maybe you need to have a little bit of knowledge. So maybe, okay, I'll give these past two people a little bit of a pass because you need some people who know what the hell is going on. And as we know, firefighters with health issues and everything, so you got to have somebody with a medical back. Okay, that makes good sense to me with that. All right, let's not, right, but again, no firefighter. I believe he was in, he was a Vietnam vet. Okay, now we're, here, he was a Vietnam vet. Okay, let me go down here. Medical officer, right, lieutenant commander. Okay, so in combat. Okay, now this makes sense. He's probably, my opinion, probably the most qualified person here with this. And, being that he's a military man, okay, he's good. We're fine. And we have our last person here. And I'm not eviscerating. Remember, I didn't mention names here, so I'm not eviscerating these people. Same thing, from long history here with this, and she attended the 2012 Democratic National Convention. All right, and she was a member of the Los Angeles Democratic Central Committee. Again, with this. Now, you're going to say, well, Jimmy, you're going against. I'm not going against anyone. For all I know, these may be the only people that even wanted this job. You got to put qualified people in these positions. If there is a reason why you cannot get qualified people in these positions, you have to got to figure out why that is. Do you need to pay them? Do you need to pay them more? What's the deal? Is there a barrier to getting actual firefighters? So when the fire chief says, I need X, Y, and Z to be here with this. I need more people, more equipment, more infrastructure, a water supply, everything that she labeled this, Chief Crowley. Are they going to say, well, I don't even know what that means. I get this all the time as a safety guy. Come on. Why do you need those yellow suits? Do I have to get the yellow suit story again? Why do we need this? Why do we need that? I'm not spending that kind of money. I had a conversation today. I'm not spending that kind of money for that. Are you kidding me? Especially since I never had a problem. And since we had a change in administration and I heard from the guy down the street and his brother's cousin's next door roommate said that there's not going to be OSHA anymore because Trump is in. I mean, come on. This is not rocket science. I've done rocket science, rocket cleaning. I know what it is. This ain't that. If you don't have people on these commissions and on these boards that are able to, A, they had experience, right, with this. They had experience with the specific thing. They had education with it. They were able to learn about it. They have some kind of public safety background. They are, or maybe for all I know, these commissioners, and if I was a commissioner, I would actually go out on the fires, see what these men and women do in the fire service. Go out, see what they are. And then you get on the other hand in the safety industry, right? We know this. You know that I'm telling you the truth with this. Where somebody becomes a safety person, they're right out of school, right? They're totally right out of school, and they were told because their professor told them that they know everything, right? And what ends up happening? Oh, there's shame and you get blame. And one of my customers is going through this right now with an oil terminal. You have been doing safety wrong. We're going to have to do this. By the way, you had an incident. You don't know what you're doing. You don't know. And we're like, dude, we've been doing this since, he's been doing this since 2009. I've been doing this since 1992. We got more credentials between the both of us than you ever would hope to have, right? And number two, so we have the credibility here. Why don't you calm down? Why don't you ask us what we're doing? Do you know this thing called the learning team where you go out and you learn the job? Can you do that? Again, where the hell are you getting these people? Hire qualified people. If you don't know, if you're in this situation, learn the job. Because I have a feeling that if we had actual firefighters and public service people, public safety people, something like that, doing this, all five of them, I don't think that we would have had this happen with the fires. And you have to, I don't know what the whole history is, you have to have multiple years of people that are qualified to do this job. With this. And this is the other thing. A couple years ago, I had a conversation with James Taylor from the Heartland Institute. And we were talking about, I don't know if it made it to the podcast or not, but we were talking about the need for generalists. We were talking about that in 2009, I believe it was, 2008, or the need for generalists. Where you have to have people who know a lot about everything. They have to be a polymath, right? So sometimes I put down the Jim Poelzl CSV safety polymath at the bottom here, right? You have to have a polymath in charge here that knows a lot about a lot of things. So that's what we got, and we're going to continue here in a moment. For Safety Words, this is Jim Poelzl. We'll be coming back at you in a few minutes.
From the front lines of the safety war, it's Safety Wars, with your host, Jim Poelzl on Safety FM. Get ready to face the harsh reality.
OSHA recordables, catastrophic losses, environmental disasters. You want answers? So do I. This is Jim Poelzl with Safety Wars.
That's my daddy!
Okay, and we are back. We are back here. So there's going to be an ongoing cleanup operation here, obviously in California. And they all, no, and I have to slightly disagree with some of the commentators. I even have to disagree. Oh, God forbid I have to disagree with the president here, but I have to. And I think it may be some editing issues where the news media edits things and sometimes they edit out some really important things. This situation in California is not unlike the 9/11 cleanups. The same thing with the cleanups in California. I'm sorry, North Carolina. I got a cat here running around. A lot of the other ones. Now we are into, they're saying, well, this is a demo phase. They're going to demo, they got to do cleanups and everything else. This is more of an environmental cleanup at this point. You say, well, Jim, no, what do you mean? Well, we went to, in the past, extensive commentary on the dangers of electric cars as far as environmental work and the cleanup and everything else and fighting fires with them. That might be a big issue here with this. I know in my neighborhood, because we have the Tesla dealer, one of the main ones, apparently, one of the original ones right here in, I believe it's Fairfield, New Jersey, about a half an hour or 45 minutes away, depending on traffic. Right, we have a situation in our town. A lot of these fire with what happens when one of these vehicles catches on fire, and that's everywhere, because now you're dealing with a battery fire. Battery fires tend to be a lot different than a regular fire with the automobile, and that right. So now we're dealing with whatever the contents are the batteries, lithium batteries. These compounded, the lithium ion batteries is compounded to firefighting. Now we have a cleanup, and we have everything else that goes into a house, all the different chemicals and stuff out there. So, well, what we have here, what we're able to do, and we're going to go over this in the very near future, is the disaster site worker outreach training. We do this. Safety Wars, we do this. Right? I'm one of the few people that are certified in doing all four standard outreach training courses is one of them. So we have the 7.5-hour disaster site worker one, where we, and these are the topics, right? Characteristics of a disaster and hazard awareness, tool and equipment safety, risk assessment, incident command system, very important here, ICS, hierarchy of controls, PPE, right? And then we have going on for the 2-day class, a 15-hour class, characteristics of a disaster and hazard awareness, tool and equipment safety, risk assessment, incident command, hierarchy of controls, and PPE. All dealing with, and a lot of this, I don't know what the whole history is, but I know after 9/11, this became very, very important to a lot of communities, especially in the recovery communities, because they were treating 9/11 as a regular disaster site. I'm sorry, as a regular demo site. And again, demo sites are very dangerous also. But here we have a situation where you have the environmental aspect with this, the industrial hygiene aspect for it, which we've always had, but we like to concentrate on that. We like to mention that on this show. Pardon me. Here. With that. So that's something to point out. And you may also say, well, you know, what's the big deal? Well, we know with the last major disaster that we've had, which was the Gulf oil spill in 2010, the long-term studies have come out that the people with the least access to healthcare were on that cleanup, which is going to be what is going to be here in California. Now, they're not going to get union workers as doing these cleanups. They're going to be getting these, unless they're doing it themselves, they're going to have everybody else do these cleanups, may not have access long to healthcare. You know, well, it's California, yeah, but still, they still might not have access to that. Hold on. All right. Yeah, so, what's my point? They're long-term on all of them. I'm getting emails and everything. We just awarded a project. Anyway, long-term, the health impacts of the Gulf oil spill are becoming very apparent. OSHA last year admitted to 50,000 people a year dying, basically from occupational illnesses that they really can't track, that they don't track. So I always bring that out. We hear the 5,000 people a year dying in the workplace, give or take. It's actually closer to 55,000. Those are not Jimmy's numbers. Those are OSHA's numbers. Now, whoever the new head of OSHA is going to be, if I were them, I would be going out and trying to reestablish credibility. If I was in charge of the public health service, if I was in charge of anyone dealing with safety or public health, including the safety industry, that's what I would be doing. Restore credibility. We're not talking financial, but with everything else, responsible governance. That's what's needed here. Going on here, press releases. Now, since we have, we're in limbo here, everyone's still getting appointed. Hopefully they're going to start doing press releases again. One, it makes my job easier. But we'll find things to do. It's Safety Wars, right? We're always about improving things. But there have only been a couple, really nothing on that front here. I think it might be worth a phone call here with this. So U.S. Department of Labor has cease and desist all investigative and enforcement activity under rescinded order, Executive Order 12246. This came out on Friday afternoon. Acting Secretary of Labor Vince Misone today transmitted Secretary's Order 03-2025 to all department employees, directing them to cease and desist all investigative and enforcement activity under the rescinded Executive Order 12211246 and the regulations promulgated under it. The U.S. order applies to all department employees, including Office of Federal Contract Compliance Programs, the Office of Administrative Law Judges, and Administrative Review Board. Well, here you go. I should do a share screen on this. Hold on. Purpose: to immediately cease and desist all investigative and enforcement activity under the rescinded Executive Order 11246, Equal Employment Opportunity, September 24, 1965. So this thing is 60 years old here. Almost 60. And regulations promulgated. DOL no longer has any authority under the rescinded order. This order applies to all DOL employees, including, I don't know what those are, OFCC. Order, cease and desist all promulgated on it. Pending cases, conciliation agreements, investigations, complaints, and any other enforcement. So what does that mean? What is Executive Order 11246? So let's go and look that up. Let me go back to the non-share screen because God knows what will come up when you Google something. One, 12246 is the Equal Employment Opportunity Executive, right? Non-discrimination in government employment. Non-discrimination in employment by government contractors and subcontractors. Except in contracts exempted in accordance with blah, 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 all government contracting agencies shall include every government contract herein entered into the following provisions. The contractor will not discriminate against any employer or applicant for the employment because of race, color, religion, sex, sexual orientation, gender identity, or national origin. The contractor will take affirmative action to ensure that applicants are employed and that employees are treated during employment without regard to their race, color, religion, sex, sexual orientation, gender identity, or national origin. Such action shall include, but not be limited to, employment, upgrade, basically all aspects of employment. The contractor will in all solicitations or advances or employees placed by or on behalf of the contractor state that the qualified applicants will receive consideration for employment. Going on. And it's a very... I assume that, and shame on me, that this stuff was passed by law. Right, but not an executive order. So why would you put something that's so important to us culturally as an executive order and not as a law? Let's face it, the Democrats have had control of Congress from the years 1994 and 40 years before that, 1954, except for one brief 86-88, where Republicans owned the Senate. Why? Were they expecting to be in control all the time? They had many opportunities. So who was there? You had Johnson. You had Carter. You had Clinton. Right, Clinton for 2 years. He had all the houses, the House, Senate, right, House and Senate. You had Obama, and you had Biden. You mean to tell me nobody thought maybe we should enshrine this? I don't know. So here we have Ending illegal discrimination, restoring merit-based opportunity, executive order from last week, right? With that, we went through that a little bit, but November 13th last year, the Biden administration had issued a guide in conjunction with the Department of Labor and Department of Commerce to say exactly this, merit-based opportunities. So my question is this. Again, since Jimmy Poulsel seems to be the only one reading these executive orders, why wasn't there arguments then? And why was it okay then, but not okay now? And right, even though that wasn't an official policy, that's sort of like, no, gives us now the argument that, look, the Biden administration was proposing, was promoting this now and started the conversation. And now, guess what? Now we're doing it this way. The other thing is this, the problem with it, and this is, I'm not the first one to say this on this. These, in 65, different world, significantly different world here in the United States here. Some would argue, no, it's not significant, but I think it was significantly different. Nobody pointed out what would be successful. When would these programs need to be rolled back? That debate was never happened. Let that sink in. It all comes down to this. All right? Here, let's do... All comes down to this. You folks, does this look familiar? We're not, this is not the first time that we discuss this here on this show. This is the issue attention cycle. One, we had the pre-problem stage, meaning undesirable condition. Then we have alarmed discovery and euphoric enthusiasm. Then we have the realization of the cost of significant progress. That's where we were for a long time here, and it frustrated a lot of people and our upheaval, societal upheaval in the last 10 years here. A gradual decline in public interest. We were there for many years. Post-problem stage. And then it starts all over again. We're victims to this. We are. We're victims to this issue attention cycle. And it's incumbent that if you see a problem, you continue to hammer home. Same thing happened, you could say, with the fires in LA that we were just discussing for 40 minutes. Same deal. We get caught up in this, and we can't do this. I don't understand the whole context, and I don't know how this is going to pan out with these executive orders here. But again, as I've said repeatedly, do you need a regulation to work safely? Not really. You don't need a regulation to work safely. Do you need these executive orders in your own personal life to do the right thing? It's never, as Martin Luther King said, it's never too late to do the right thing. It's always the right time to do the right thing with this. And we have to get along. So that's what's going on. And this is Safety Wars for Monday, January 27th. And we are going to conclude with our patriotic outro. And we'll throw on some music on there at the end, too. How do you like the music? You like the Ballad of Jim Poulsel? I like it. So for Safety Wars, this is Jim Poulsel. I'm looking forward to seeing you tomorrow.